5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome. That was to the energetic and totally not scripted AtlantaWarhammer.com podcast, which is the
totally awesome and awkward at the same time.
Which is basically who we are as people, I think. We are the official sponsored podcast of AtlantaWarhammer.com, which is the official AtlantaWarhammer.com website, which is in no way sponsored or affiliated by Games Workshop or even acknowledged by Games Workshop in any way, shape, or form.
They don't even know we exist.
Senpai
never will. And the opinions in here are all our own, including all the bad ones and all of the misread rules and terrible ideas we have during this podcast. So,
and
to get things
weird
started,
audio cuts is because I said a bad word.
Are we within 30 seconds? Can we get David his mic on?
No, not yet.
Okay, David, you're not allowed to talk for another couple of seconds. So, to get things started, my name is Zach. I am going to be leading this merry band of podcast people. Who have I got to my right?
You've got Josh Rebuck.
Always using last names because he's fancy.
You know what? I'm a fancy guy, man.
He is a fancy guy. Josh Rebuck is our leading fancy lad, and now to not curse directly into the microphone, who's on the far side of the table?
I am David Hughes. I am not a fancy lad, ever.
He's unfancy. He's the opposite of fancy.
Very.
So, we are here to talk about Warhammer, specifically Age of Sigmar, because that's the game that we all play. I think we've all dabbled in some other Warhammer spinoffs and whatnot over the years, but it all kind of came back to Warhammer Fantasy, and specifically Age of Sigmar, which I think we can all admit is... This is good. And now we're going to lose all of our listeners immediately.
All probably, the 40k people are gone.
they weren't listening. I think Age of Sigmar is probably the best fantasy game Games Workshop has ever done. We can say that in the first episode because the unsubscribe button isn't even live yet. So, ha! I think it's a fantastic system. It's easy to pick up and play. There's a ton of variety. And it's relatively balanced if you don't try to game it. If you're aware of the system, I think it plays really well.
If you're not a top tournament player, I think it's pretty well balanced.
Right. And you can balance it yourself. If you are playing with a friend, you can kind of judge, I'm not going to bring 30 evocators against your, Kerrigan Overlords, for instance, because I want you to try to win with Kerrigan Overlords.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes. Well, sorry about that one time I accidentally beat you with Kerrigan Overlord.
Yeah.
Who would have thought Ungors?
I know.
So powerful.
Murder Kerrigan Overlords. Who knew? Also, Space Dwarves, terrible against beasts.
All right, guys, so the first thing we're going to do before we get into our best and worst of 2020, or 2019, or whatever year it is. 2019 sounds good. We're going to tell
you people listening in 2030, we're sorry.
Oh, gosh, do you think this will be around that long?
Oh, my gosh, they're on AOS, 12.0 by that point.
I think they're actually on Warhammer Fantasy Squarebase.
Oh,
again,
yeah, we're
that's
all about Squarebase.
Yeah,
we're
back
to Squarebase.
Everything
you
around
buy models, you just wear a VR headset, and it all just goes on the table.
How can they make money off that? We buy the digital model.
You have to buy the VR.
The Games Workshop Citadel Digital Paint Set Collection. That's what it is.
I'm very excited for those digital sprues.
Digital sprues. I hate cleaning digital sprues. There's so much digital flash, and it bogs down all my systems, and it doesn't even work on iOS devices.
Just don't have enough RAM to keep up with.
The system requirements to play Age of Sigmar in real life. If you equated money to system requirements, you would need a supercomputer because this is a very expensive hobby. And
just a little bit.
Yeah. It's a very time-consuming hobby as well.
Well, nice transition there, Zach. So why don't you start us off then and tell us, when did you start playing Age of Sigmar?
Whoa! Good call. So actually, I started originally playing Warhammer Fantasy way back when I was 12 years old or so. I had a little dwarf army. I painted everybody individually. They all had their own little stories. Took them down to the game shop. Got immediately destroyed my learning game and never wanted to play again because I didn't understand the game and the people playing it were a bit grognardy. So they kind of sat on my shelf for a while until 4-ish years ago, I guess, which is when Age of Sigmar really launched, and got back into it. Finally had the income to do it, and man, it is definitely worth it at this point. And I feel good that I didn't have to deal with a lot of the older systems because it was easy for me to come in and just immediately learn Age of Sigmar and not have residual knowledge built in of all the old ways it played. So for me, Age of Sigmar is Warhammer. That has become Warhammer for me, which I I think the Warhammer Fantasy stuff is cool, and I want to, I know there's a lot of people out there that list that do Ninth Age, which is the Warhammer Fantasy kind of rule set, and I think it has its merits, but I just don't think that square bases and perfectly lined up troops to me always looked kind of weird in a way. And so I think visually Age of Sigmar just works better for me. And that being said, it's a simple system, which is the other thing, is I've got a couple of tomes over here from Warhammer Fantasy, and they are way more complex rule systems, which if you like that, that's good. But at a certain point, you just don't have the time to sit down and learn an entire encyclopedia and a phone book to play a game with little painted toys. Sometimes you just want to play little painted toys.
Which is pretty much how I got back into it as well. Because, I mean, you had mentioned that you had started playing again, and I was an old 40K player back when I was in high school. And I was like,
we won't hold that against you.
I know. But I had kind of fallen out of it because I had gotten busy, college had happened, and I didn't want to have to relearn rule sets. But the nice thing with Age of Sigmar is that the rules really weren't all that complicated. It was kind of boiled down to a simple couple of phases, a couple of steps, learn an army, and you're good to go. And so now, as I can say, about 18 months into this, it's been going pretty well, especially as a destruction player.
Yeah, Josh, tell us about being an Iron Jaws player in the current day and age. How did that work out?
It's really worked out well. Yeah, I got to live through the latter days of Iron Jaws and it not being great. And now with the new Iron Jaws book, it's doing really well for me. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I'm not gonna lie.
I was surprised to lose to Iron Jaws.
I'm sure you were.
So that was a surprising change for me. But I know what you're saying. Like, that was when I was playing Death back when it was just Grand Alliance Death. And boy, that was not a well-done system for that. I was just getting tabled and lost left and right.
I'm still
and then
mad
Legions
about
of Nagash came out.
I'm still mad about Nagash.
That was the only way I had to win back then, was just pay Nagash to show up to the table and I hope he just kills everything.
Which I did.
Which he did usually, yeah. But that was back in the Floorhammer days. I'd say graduated. So speaking of Floorhammer, David, when did you get into Age of Sigmar?
I got into Age of Sigmar same time you did, actually.
Oh, it's so weird. It's like we got into it kind of together almost.
However, I didn't have any background in tabletop wargaming previously. It was mostly D&D, Magic Gathering, card games, board games kind of stuff. And at first we were going to do 40K, if I remember right.
We were on that precipice. We were so close.
We were right there. I was going to do Tyranids, I think.
You were Tyranids, yeah.
And then Liz, which is somebody not here, pointed out there were dinosaur people in Age of Sigmar, and that was all that needed to happen.
That's all it took for it, wasn't it?
Yeah, just dinosaur people. Yeah.
Once David saw he could just play Jurassic Park the table game, he was going to do that.
And I did very well.
Yeah. Speaking of playing books that didn't have any support, and luckily Seraphon...
Not yet. Well, soon.
Pour
hopefully,
one out.
Maybe.
Pour one out for Seraphon.
Pour one out for Seraphon.
We've been pouring one out for Seraphon for 3 years now. Yes. That cup has runneth empty.
One day we'll get new sprues of Source Warriors, and we won't get two left over in the Star Collecting Box.
Or what about some Source Knights that aren't a single piece of plastic?
If I never have to rebuild another Source Knight model ever again, it'd be too soon.
Those were
awful.
It was weird to me that the Source Knights looked so bad, but the Dark Elf with the same Cold One mounts looked so much better. It didn't make any... The Dark Elves had better dinosaurs than the dinosaur people.
Yeah. And I don't care about your excuse that those Cold Ones were actually real and ours weren't. I don't care.
Well, the Seraphim this point makes no... There's no way it makes any sense.
I'm sure the next book's going to retcon everything and something weird's going to happen. Lord Croak never died, whatever.
He's dead, but he never died. Because he's always been dead. He's just...
His body was dead, his soul wasn't something, I don't know. He destroyed a meteor with his mind.
He survived the end times. He's one of the characters that survived the end times.
He destroyed a meteor with his mind. Let me see your god do that. Wait, he's not a god.
Yeah, he's not a god, no.
I'm sorry, Sotek. Forgive me.
Oh, nice deep lore. All right, guys. So now that everybody at home knows who we are, we're going to talk about the best things the Games Workshop, specifically Age of Sigmar, has done this year, and the worst things they've done this year. And I wanted to say this again before we get into this, because we're going to start with the worst first, and then we're going to end up with the best, because that's just a more fun podcast.
We got to end on a high note.
We have to end on a high note. This is not in any way, I think, to rip apart the game we all play and love. Those of you at home can't see, but there are lots of shelves surrounding us full of lots of little painted men. And eventually when we start doing battle reports and that kind of thing, you're going to see how much we really care about this game. So when we're picking at a worst of... It's usually more out of a, why did you do that? Why is this here kind of thing? Because we care about this game and we want it to be awesome. We want to share it with people.
And I'll be honest, it was really hard to try to come up with the worst things they did, because I feel like that's really few and far between.
Yeah, they've done a lot better, I think, with a lot of the standard why does Games Workshop do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
More questionable choices and really just really bad decisions.
Yeah, it's like mild frustrations.
Yeah.
It's like we want the game to be at its absolute best, and there's just certain things that happen in any given release or throughout the year as we kind of notice things that just doesn't quite sit right with us.
We look at them and go, why?
Yeah, why did you do that to us?
So, I'm going to go first.
Zach, you start us off?
I'm going to start off.
Yeah, man, start us off.
Because my worst of the year is a concept, not necessarily a model, although it was hooked to a particularly big release that everyone was really excited about or absolutely hated. I think there's nothing more polarizing this year than Slaanesh. I think that was...
Oh, man.
While I thought Flesh Eater Courts and Skaven were definitely on the this is a very unfun list to lose against in the first turn of any battle kind of thing, mm-hmm. Slaanesh took it to a whole different level of making you lose every game, even ones you didn't play in, it felt like. And the reason behind that wasn't necessarily the overpowered stuff, because the stats of everything, while strong, didn't necessarily break the game. It was the activation wars. To me, to introduce a concept, and this is going to peel back a lot about how game systems and rule systems work and kind of how I look at the whole thing. Having a game system is built to have fun between two people. And when you have a concept that you bring out and you accentuate with an army, you should pick one that's fun for both players. In this example, a lot of Slaanesh things, and I don't think anybody here has actually played Slaanesh, so if we get any of these names and things wrong, please forgive us, because we probably will get a lot of them wrong. I don't think anybody really enjoyed the fact that Slaanesh as an army can now basically... And this is, I haven't looked at the new errata stuff that came out a couple days ago, so this might be outdated. But the ability for them to all manipulate the turn orders, especially just the amount of times they can do it, the amount of ways they can do it, and it became such a rules complication, especially in our meta. We saw just the amount of questions and frustration it caused of, well, this character says you act last, well, this character actually says you act first, this character gets to act twice, when does the second activation happen? Games Workshop put out a little graphic to show things. It didn't really clear up a lot, at least. It's a whole problem. And the concept, it's based on manipulating turn order, which to me is in itself not a fun concept. It doesn't let the other person interact, really. And it could be, to me, solved very easily by just giving Slaanesh the ability to attack first versus manipulate and make you attack last. I know that that's not really as thematic as them being enrapturing and sort of, you know, captivating you to where you can't hit them until they've hit you. But that also makes it more fun for the other person. I've lost many a match against Slaanesh in my day.
I think we all have.
Yeah. And to me, to be credit, I've lost most games I've played of this game, probably. I don't usually play to win. I try to play to win. But I don't usually play to be the top tier meta destroyer.
We're not meta chasers at this
no,
table.
And I,
in
I,
case
I,
anybody I, was asking.
No.
I play
no,
Beast
no.
Ball Raiders. I'm not chasing
yeah,
by
I,
any.
I put a Star Drake in every list I can, so I'm not anywhere near a meta that
My list of the week was 5 Thunder Tusk and a Stonehorn. So.
Yeah, and that sounds fun.
It's fun stuff.
So the activation war is taking the ability for the other person to play. To me, that just, it didn't need to happen, and it's so confusing. And they didn't roll it back fast enough, and now it's become, I think, too permanent for Slaanesh. That's just a part of how they function. And I'm worried now because if they introduce any other army with that as an ability, as a main ability, not just something that one guy or another person could do, because that's actually, it's been around in the wild game. The Beast of Chaos spell, the giant Fleming Bull guy, I forgot his name. He could do it. He could make a unit attack last. I know there's a couple people that could jump the line and attack first, that kind of thing. Like, it never felt like it was that big of a deal.
It wasn't as rampantly common, though.
Yeah, it was only one or two guys.
I think another issue with it was, in my mind, it didn't really fit with the fantasy of Slaanesh. When I thought Slaanesh, I thought more debuffing very fast units.
That's kind of what they used to be.
Yeah.
And when they started, you know, manipulating turn order, it didn't really seem to fit with them. In my opinion, it seemed like something more Tzeentch or even Seraphon, since Seraphon manipulate time a lot. That's a big theme for them.
Actually makes sense, yeah.
So for Slaanesh, it didn't really seem to jive with me, so it always took me by surprise when it happens.
When I think it was supposed to be that they're too captivating. So yeah. Your guys show up and, oh, this thing is too alluring and too beautiful, and I don't know until the minute it kills me how horrifying it is. Which, if it's only on certain things, is okay. But when you lose the first turn of the game, and you're almost tabled because there's two keepers that just blow through everything you brought. And by, you know, Sigmar help you if you have something like Ogors or Nurgle that's just a giant depravity point, you know,
pile
sink for them. But losing everything to two keepers and then having the person immediately be able to summon a third keeper of secrets onto the table is kind of like, well, I'm glad I unpacked my army.
Sure.
And it was that level of just ridiculousness.
Yeah, I think one of the things for us with the turn order activation wars, we've talked at length about this, is that there's sort of like a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, if it's like one time sort of thing, like there's one unit that can do it maybe, or you kind of get to pick where it happens, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's just sort of everything, is there's like, oh, so you just get to play the game and I just have to kind of stand here.
Right.
And, yeah, and that's the part
fun,
we don't
it's
like.
It's never fun going against an opponent and knowing automatically you might as well just concede.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to feel like they just wasted their time.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is this game is very, it's intensive. You have to buy all these things. Then you have to dig yourself out of poverty from buying an entire army. And then you have to paint the entire army. And then you have to show up to a tournament. You have to know all of your rules. You have to be ready to go. You got your accessories. You got your dice. You got everything. You've made a huge effort to play this game to then, within 15 minutes of putting your toys on the table, have them immediately be taken off is just not fun for anyone except for a very specific person who probably shouldn't be playing war games. Because if it's fun to just make your opponent rage quit or lose in the first turn for you, this is probably not a great game for you. It's it doesn't really work that way because it's supposed to be a fun game between people. Now, once again, we're not tournament people. So
right.
I'm sure the top tier people would look at this and they're guffawing and they're laughing and mocking us for our inability to do this the right way. But it's a game.
Yeah.
And it's a two to multiple person game. And in the way, it should be fun. And I think that there are ways to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely something that drives away a lot of new players. I remember back when I used to play Magic the Gathering, and I used to have tons of fun until, you know, the tryhards and the grognards would just push me away, and they push away tons of new people just trying to have fun.
And that's Slaanesh, not once again, it's not really Slaanesh, it's really more on the activation things, but Slaanesh is just the biggest target and culprit for this. It does scare away, I think, new players, because if you go up against that army and you're one of your first experiences with this game is, you know, you showed up to the game store and you're bright and shining and you have your probably Stormcast in a box because that's what you got from your starter kit and you're ready to go. And then you get immediately destroyed and you didn't even get the chance to roll dice.
Yeah.
And to me, that just it takes the agency away from the fun.
I think it also gave a lot of people whiplash. Slaanesh went from like probably a bottom tier army, and
it was
suddenly like overnight, it's like a top tier army.
Yeah, Slaanesh was not in a great place, and now it's in the best place.
Like people would take Slaanesh units in certain chaos lists
mm-hmm.
because they were just good units.
Well, I think we all racked up a lot of victories against old Slaanesh just because it didn't really. It ran fast, it ran into you, and then it died. And
yeah,
I mean,
right.
I can't tell you the amount of times I played Stormcast against Slaanesh and felt like I was way too overpowered with my Sacrosanct Chamber. And now if I dared to put Stormcast in front of Slaanesh, it's like, have fun with the depravity points as you just mow through everything.
Mowing through this stuff, yeah.
So yeah, that was my worst stuff.
Yeah.
Josh, what do you hate? What do you hate more than anything in life?
Well,
right now, this instance.
It's not something that I hate more than anything in life, but I...
that's not the energy I need today.
Well, I'm sorry, but my worst of 2019 is GoTrek.
Gotcha.
And
we just lost all of our other viewers.
We did. Because, man, people love
GoTrek.
All right,
guys, I'm glad you enjoyed our first episode and our last episode.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, so, and really it's not... I mean, it is GoTrek by itself, but really what my problem is the single model like PowerPoint creep is that if you can just bring a model to the table and go, this is going to murder everything, and it doesn't matter how many points it is, it doesn't matter how many points you throw at it, you're going to lose. And there's a thing in the game that I can't really wrap my head around where it's like, oh, hey, you know, there should be like these big heroes and they should do lots of great stuff. But if my mega boss and a mantra crusher is, which is a giant hulking beast of a unit,
yes,
is going to
a
get
cabbage.
A little cabbage dragon.
Yes, cabbage dragon.
A very not cheap unit.
Right.
No.
Is going to get murdered by GoTrek, who's approximately, I mean, close in point value there.
I think they're pretty close.
Yeah, they're pretty
five
close.
Something.
Yeah, he's like 5 something. A regular Mega Boss and Mob Crusher is 460.
Yes. You see how well we know the game, everyone at home, by the way. Yeah. It's 5-something. Yeah, we can look it up. But
yeah, we can look it up. Why?
Bring out the warped battle tones.
Like, you just, you assume that, like, if things are pointed, that those things should be even in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of not how that unit and a lot of other units work. And so, really what I know we have a hopes and dreams for 2020 sort of thing, but I'm going to kind of retrofit some ideas maybe. It is, if we kind of bracket everything off as far as point values go and say, okay, this unit is probably approximately the same as this unit, I think the game might just be in a better place going forward because everybody kind of gets a sense as to how powerful something's supposed to be.
Right.
And yeah. So if we're going to bring that to the table, then it's like, great, hey, that's a 1,000-point model. It's going to be it's going to be as destructive as all get out. Let me bring a 1,000-point model and let those two things fight it out.
Yeah, and that's actually getting back to kind of what they had with the original open play concept, which was sort of just bring what you have and kind of eyeball where it'll be.
Yeah.
Shake hands on what, make sure it's fair. Shake hands.
And have a good time, which is the core concept of the game. We're not doing it right. Sorry. Comment below with how bad we're doing this.
That dwarf.
He can ruin Nagash, who is not exactly double his points, but at least 1.5 times his points. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is kind of like, and I do love Nagash and all, but that doesn't feel right. And I actually recently played a game where Gotrek just was on the center point, and I was playing Ossiarch Bone Reapers. It's a really, really cool army, spoiler alert. And it was unimaginable how much damage he put out against that entire army, and basically he kept the 1 point down, and between that and constantly regenerating Phoenix Guard, it was like there's no way to get past him. And I understand that a lot of people say, well, he's one model and the way to deal with him is ignore him or tar pit him or something like that, and that if you have the way to do that in your list already, mm-hmm. you're prepared for it. But if you have something that kind of that wants to stand still and fall down slow, something like a Nurgle list or a kind of a more defensive Stormcast list, he's just gonna ruin you because he only has to get into combat and he attacks twice per phase,
right?
So he's gonna kill everything.
Well, he's a do everything model.
Yeah,
and I really never feel like there should be a model that just
he's not a wizard, so he's not as powerful as you think.
He might as well
he's an action wizard.
I'm sure there's an artifact you can slap on him and
give him a spell or something. Who knows?
He does
everything well. Other than, I guess, cast spells. And I guess he doesn't technically shoot, but who cares? Yeah, he doesn't have to, because he's going to attack twice, and if he's going to kill everything, and anything that he doesn't kill that's still within 3 inches, he's going to kill.
And I think that actually, this kind of pulls back a more interesting concept with how Games Workshop has these limited edition models like that. Traditionally, they've not been great. Let me just turn slowly and look at Slambo over here. Hey, Slambo! Yeah, so they're limited edition. We love Slambo, but he's no Gotrek.
Yeah,
he's 80 points of Slambo action over there. But usually their limited edition stuff or their exclusive stuff is good, but not, oh my gosh, this is going to change the game. There's a Stormcast Knight that is a limited edition that's actually pretty good. I think it's a Knight Quester. I'm probably wrong on that. It's one of those guys.
Right.
And he's pretty good, but he's not incredible. He doesn't completely change the game.
He's not an auto-include if you're running a cities list.
Yeah, and Gotrek, I think he fits so well into cities lists because he just kind of, he can take a point, and he's not going to lose the point.
Right.
And if you're playing something like Living City or Hallowheart or anything that has access to healing,
mm-hmm.
he got hit with a life swarm and got, you know, 4 wounds back, and it was like, well, that was 2 turns worth of damage he just got back.
Yeah.
So
he's just going to hang out.
Yeah. Oh, and you can just auto-kill him with... No, actually, he resists auto-kills, too. Yeah, so you can't hand-of-dust him. You can't catapult him with the creepy-crawly catapult attack.
Sure,
so.
Yeah, he's just going to stand there. He's just going to stare at you.
Yeah, at least, though, he's one guy, and I could see some maps like... what is the one we always hate, where we have to hold 8 points and then take the other 8 points?
Oh, you're talking about Scorched Earth.
Scorched Earth. Sure. I could think he could be pretty bad at that.
Sure.
Because he just wouldn't have... He's only a 4-inch move. And I've heard that the best way to deal with him, if you don't have anything else, is to try to do some movement impairment things, which if you've got access to it, once again, fantastic. But if you don't have access to that, you're just going to have to take it on the chin. And he's a real big fist to take on the chin.
Yeah, well, and he's certainly not the only model kind of that is in that sort of do everything sort of mold. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I kind of want to I would like for Games Workshop to kind of stay away from is the, here's this model, it does everything, and then just bring some battle line, you'll be great. Like, I want to see an army. Like, I want to see an army. It can be elite units. That's cool. It doesn't have to be, like, 40, 50 models that you're putting on the table. It could only be, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 if you're running some...
if you're David.
Yeah, if you're David.
You just want to play Kaiju, the Warhammer game.
Kaiju, the Warhammer game, right. But it's the one guy, and then you're just bringing battle line to meet a battle line requirement, and then really just one model is going to take care of most of everything else that you're playing against.
Yeah.
That for me is the worst thing that you could continue that you've done in 2019 that might continue into the 2020s.
And I think cities is actually where he started being, at least what I've seen, he started being way more of a threat, because otherwise you were bringing him in order armies, but because he couldn't take keywords, he couldn't synergize, he couldn't take an artifact or spell, he didn't get a chamber thing from Stormcast. Like, there was no way to integrate him with anything. But Cities comes along, and he's got the Dorden, I think he has a Dorden tag, but he can be affected by all of their super healing spells. He can be... Cities gave so many options for ways to get around the, well, I only have 500 points in one model, because I can have 500 models of just little dudes with halberds over here, which... counteracts it and makes up for it.
Absolutely.
I saw him in a Stormcast list, and it wasn't at all scary, because it was just a couple of Stormcast and Gotrek, and you could kind of avoid Gotrek, and then the Stormcast were Stormcast, so it wasn't as bad. But I think Cities is where he started getting just, I don't even know if he's too good, it's just once he's there, you know what he's gonna do, and if it's a map where you just have to get him off the point, you're in a really hard time.
Yeah, it's just a bad time all around for everyone,
and everyone has him. He's right over there on my shelf, too. So I'm not pointing elbows and pointing fingers. But
sure, everybody's got him.
I don't have him.
But
well, you are a king among men.
Thank you.
So you don't play Order, so...
I don't.
What would you put him in?
I mean, maybe, eventually, when Seraphon come back to us.
God, dinosaurs and Gotrek.
Dinosaurs and Gotrek. That's...
I don't think Gotrek would look good with Seraphon, unless they do something really weird with the new book, but we're not going to talk about that right now.
No, what we are going to talk about, though...
Is my worst.
What does David hate
my
more
worst
than anything?
Is actually a product. Kind of like Josh's, but it has nothing to do with the actual mechanics of the game. It is those god-awful dice. The faction dice. Specifically, on my notes, I wrote down the Gloomspite bouncy dice.
That was when they officially had to say, these dice are not for tournament play. They are novelties. They are not dice. Because before that, they've been kind of toeing the line. And like they've released the dice, and you could use them. And then the Gabo dice came out, and they bounced clear off the table half the time. The paint was coming off of them.
I mean, honestly, they could just made normal little pip dice with specific color schemes, and people would have bought them, and it would have been fine. But no, they had to do all these weird dice with weird little symbols that just are awful.
And they're, you can't read them in a hurry.
You can't.
That's what gets me. It started with Idoneth. Well,
I mean, it's cool if you buy them and you just put them on a shelf for some weird reason because you're weird. But other than that, it's more, I feel like it's more of a novelty item that they originally try to push as, you should buy these for your army so you can be cool. And then it just completely flopped.
I don't know. Like they have, like I don't mind looking at them.
They're cool to look at, but.
But I certainly can't read them playing a game.
No one can.
No, absolutely not.
You were trying to read an Ossiarch dice. They make no sense. They're just a hand with the amount of fingers.
The Sylvaneth dice? I think I looked at them recently and I didn't even know how to read them.
I played someone.
They look
in,
cool.
In the last tournament that I played in that used the Sylvaneth dice, and I didn't mind because I don't care. If you want to bring custom dice, like your custom dice, you want to roll with them during the tournament, that's totally fine by me.
Yeah.
Until they
all come up sixes all the time.
Right, and then it's like, something's a little off. But it took me, I kid you not, until at least like round two or three to figure out what any of those dice meant.
I think that's bad. Bad design.
As novelties, it's a weird concept because they're novelty dice. Dice are meant to be rolled and played with.
Yes.
Like, the concept of novelty dice.
I'm sure there's somebody out there that collects dice. Everything can be collected by somebody.
Sure.
But I don't feel like this was the kind of hobby for that to come into.
Yeah, why? What would you do with them?
You
just
remember
put them on a shelf? And
they released a corn bloodbound dice shaker.
I do remember that. There was a Stormcast one too, wasn't there?
And it looked dope.
Yeah.
Like, it looked amazing. I wish they would have just done that.
I haven't seen
it. It was like, I want to say like $40.
Yeah, they were.
It's
Games Workshop.
It was expensive, but I feel like people would have loved that. I would have bought them.
Yeah, I mean, that's
I really wanted the Khorne Bloodbound one, but I'm poor and can't afford it.
Well, that's a much better idea. Like, it's, really, it's what, a really what, good why are we idea. Doing that?
Well, like, the custom dice, so I think...
And I think the custom dice are just easier to make.
Sure. Yeah.
And they can sell them as a separate product.
Because the Khorne Bloodbound one had leather on it, I think.
It was real nice. It was so I think it was in the Stormcast, and they were like, yeah, they were like, these are the main two armies of Age of Sigmar, yeah, at least of course. In the beginning.
Browsing through eBay, I think I saw it. I think it's going for like $80 on eBay right
I'm
now.
I'm not surprised. Who knows? It was cool. So I think the custom dice, I believe, started with the Soul Wars box, which was the Nighthaunt and Stormcast box, and it just had... I think when that launched, the Sacrosanct Chamber had their own dice, and the Nighthaunt had their own dice. And they were just colored dice with normal pips. Mm-hmm. And that was cool. I still use my Nighthaunt dice. I love them. They're the light blue color. They just look neat. And then after that, they started changing the way they represent the face. And the most important thing on a dice, I think maybe there's two important things. Welcome to Dicecast, the podcast about dice and dice making. So I think there's two important things about dice. And one of them is obviously balance and fairness. The other one is... you have to be able to read it in a reasonable amount of time.
Yes.
Sure.
I think that's the biggest folly of these custom faction dice is...
they're legendary.
When I look at them, unless I... you can't read them. Unless I sit there and roll them for like an hour and quickly try to read them until I get good at it, I don't feel like anyone in a reasonable amount of time is going to get good enough at reading them.
Now, the Ogre ones are great.
The Ogre ones are big.
The Ogre ones are fantastic.
And dumb. And I don't think they're on purpose. I don't think you're supposed to use them.
Honestly, I wish the Ogre dice were just like these giant, like, 3x3 foot foam cubes.
Yeah, they
just took them in the game shop and threw them at people.
You have to roll it down the aisle.
The Ogre dice are very close to just being giant rocks. Yeah. Like, you're basically just rolling rocks.
I think you get six.
Yeah.
No, six or eight. Like, instead of a full set, you get, like, a little bit.
Yeah, you get a couple of them.
But I've seen them used for, like, counters and things, and they look
good.
Yeah,
they look good. They look good as counters.
I think if you use the faction dice as counters, that's okay for you if you want to, but trying to, you know, pawn them off as something you can use in the game, I think it was a little too much.
They couldn't keep that up after the Gabo dice started flying off tables, and the paint was coming off on a lot of them, and that's when they had
to... That's what I heard, too.
Yeah, but it's because people were handling them, and I think... the paint on that material just didn't stick because they're kind of a rubberized, so they're not the hard plastic. So they couldn't keep saying, well, these are legitimate dice for tournaments while this one rolls off the table and this one you can't actually read anymore. I'm so interested. I want to know if people take these dice to tournaments that aren't just, that's the only dice they have. I've only, in all the tournaments I've played, I've never seen anyone use the faction dice. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I take that back. The Nighthaunt player I played at LVO, who's an awesome guy, he used the Nighthaunt dice because they were just normal dice.
Sure.
Yes.
But I've never seen anybody use them in any sort of actual, I have to be able to quickly look at this and play. I know there's one guy at our local store that has the Ossiarch dice, and he said that after about a couple of weeks, he's getting pretty good at reading them, which is a couple of weeks investing into
that's not a good
dice. Metric. To read dice. That's not a good metric. Like a, how you want to go about that.
Yeah, if that's... you're going to spend all your time learning how to read dice.
I bought this book, and it took me a couple of weeks to get through the first page.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a barrier of entry to these dice, you see. You can't use them unless you can read them. I still hold, I think, the worst ones are the Ossiarch ones. They are so... If you're listening along at home, Google the Ossiarch Bone Reaper custom dice. I love you, Games Workshop. These are the worst dice you've ever
put out.
We will
put a picture on our website.
Yes. Viewers at home, tune in and watch. Maybe we'll have a YouTube thing.
So yeah, at some point. We'll talk about
that. If we have another worse, can I cover that? Or are we just...
Do you have more worse?
I do have one more.
David just
is
grumpy, so... All right, let's hear this. David's taking two worsts. I only have one worst.
So my other worst thing is probably only pertaining to these three very specific models, because I'm still very angry about it. When they re-released the Khorne, Blades of Khorne book, they redid the dog models, and they were beautiful.
They do look cool.
But
and
they
Karnak,
did.
Right? What's his name?
Karnak and the Flesh Hounds of Khorne.
It's my favorite band.
I don't know. I never used them. I don't. But anyways, so they released a two-pack that had the Mighty Lord of Khorne and the Bloodscrator. And that was cool. For the limited time that they sold it, right? It was a limited time.
I have never seen one. I saw one once ever.
I saw it once, but
I almost bought it just to have another Mighty Lord of Khorne.
But they never released a single sprue of the Khorgrath, my favorite unit in the entire game that I can only get through Star Collecting boxes in eBay. And I'm still very upset about it, and I'm never going to let it die. And I'm very upset at Games Workshop for not letting me buy single blister packs of the Khorgrath.
That
this is more of me ranting than me telling.
No, That's a valid concept, and we've actually seen a lot of it this year, because the Flesh Eater Courts guy that you could only get in the box where it was them and Skaven was very valuable to Flesh Eater Courts, that list. Once, I don't play them, so I don't know how important it was, but I know a lot of people were looking for it. Same thing with the Skaven guy. And in the new Ossiarch thing, there's the new Tyrant for the Ogors, and Vorkin Morton Dorkin, the
Bone-sized guy. Tyrant and a Blister?
No. These are only in the box. And I'm curious if they're going to ever put them out.
That's weird because when they did the Khorne Bloodbound and Slaanesh box, all the new models they released separately.
Right.
And Aranac and the Fleshhounds you could buy separately.
And they were pretty close after the initial release.
Yeah, they were.
It was a couple of weeks, maybe?
I feel like it was 2 weeks.
It wasn't as long as it's been since the Skaven and Flesh Eater Courts box came out, and we're still waiting for those single models. I think Games Workshop, that would have been my second worst if I had known we were allowed to have two worsts instead of one.
I thought we were just making a list.
David, you're off the rails, man.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, I'll pick up.
Give me your badge and gun.
Oh, man.
Your badge guns. Your gun badge.
I'm not going back to traffic court, am I?
Yes, you are.
Oh, crap. But yeah, that's my big thing. I love Khorgrass. A lot of people don't put them in their lists because they're not the best unit for 100 points. But I loved them. I had four when I played Khorne.
I remember.
And I had four in every list I ran. I thought they were a solid unit.
It was everyone that you owned.
Yeah. I remember them messing me up. I don't remember what I was playing against you, but I remember I vastly underestimated what four Khorgrass could do, because I've only ever had to fight
against them. They have good attack profiles. They have decent health, decent save. They can move relatively fast.
They're a solid unit.
They're a solid unit. You can't build an army around them, obviously. Yeah, but although they do have a battalion they can be in now.
Oh, that's cool.
I think they have a tribe they can be in.
I think that might be the most confusing part of this, is that because you can't buy them separately, but you can run them in a battalion.
Yes.
So,
and the battalion requires one to two of them.
Yeah. So how can you not, like, just have...
Well, they come in a Start Collecting box, so I guess they assume you buy Start Collecting boxes.
That's so much to get one model, though.
But also, you have to buy the Khorne Start Collecting to get the Blood Sister Crater, which is almost mandatory in every list.
Yeah, that's true as well. There are some auto-includes on some of these Start Collecting boxes where it's like, you have to... Does the War Chanter come... as a single model?
Yes. I think you can get the War Chanter as a single model.
That would be...
I have seen blisters of...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, of the War Chanter.
I think that's like the standout guy
for... I think the War Chanter looks
Warclans?
Warclans.
For
Orgor Tribes of Warclan draws. Sure. Whatever the... Too many books came out in a hurry, and they all melded together in my head, and now I don't know which army I'm talking about.
Totally fair. But, it would be nice if, like, single sprues... just kind of...
And it's not like they're not producing that sprue anymore, because it's
Start
Collecting
Box. It's still going in the Start Collecting Box. Just sell it separately. Even if it's just on the Games Workshop website.
And if I remember right, it wasn't connected to another model's sprue. I think it was on its own.
Yeah, the monsters usually...
It's been a while since I've done it, but...
It's been a while since we assembled the beginner's kit.
That particular Khorgrath model together, yeah. But no, that's...
But also, it's such a good-looking model. I think for its age, I think it's a great look. It's fun to paint. Like,
I've never been able to figure out where its head is.
Spoiler alert, I don't like painting. I'm not good at painting, but I loved painting the Khorgrath. And it's the only model so far that I've really actually enjoyed painting.
You hear that, Games Workshop?
Put out single sprues.
Little David, sick and home in his bed, has one wish. Release Khorgraths in a damn blister
pack. One random person on a random podcast wants you to do something.
There's like two guys out there right now. They're just like, yes, finally.
Their mash and subscribe is hard. This is the Khorgrath podcast.
There has to be more Khorgrath lovers out there.
Khorgrath lovers.
I like to call my Khorgies.
Email David at khorgrathlover@hotmail.com. Don't do that. Or do it. Maybe it's an email. Someone we
I
should
do not
claim
own
that
email, but I'm going to go home and try to get that email.
We should claim it right now.
Somebody already owns it.
Somebody. What's a Hotmail account?
I will buy that Hotmail account for $5.
KhorgrathDaddyForYou@ninespring.com. .net, I think.
So do we feel pretty good then about our complaints for 2019?
I feel pretty bad about our complaints, but I feel good about this next section.
I feel good too, because I'm ready to go to a positive place.
Do you want to take the lead on this one?
I would love to take the lead on this one.
Good, because I want to drink my soda away from the microphone.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. No, so if we're talking about the best from 2019, I've got one particular book that really spoke to me. Which is hilarious because it's not what you think, even though I'm a destruction player. But it's Cities of Sigmar.
I'm shocked.
I know. I'm shocked.
I can't
too.
See your notes from here. I'm totally shocked.
I'm shooketh.
I can see his notes, but I have terrible eyesight now, so I can't read it.
And I have terrible handwriting.
Yeah,
so.
All of us have awful handwriting.
Have you seen how big my letters are? Because I write in all caps and I'm a child.
You only yell. On
you might be surprised that I'm choosing Cities of Sigmar as my best of 2019, considering that I just spent a lot of time ripping GoTrek.
Right. And I don't think I've ever seen you play an Order Army.
It's true.
Well, the one time.
One time. Yeah. I'm still waiting. But
your Sigmar army before?
My Stormcast?
Stormcast. Yeah. I always call it Sigmar.
That's pretty
close enough.
I mean, they worship Sigmar, I guess.
Yeah. But the thing that I really like about the Cities of Sigmar book, and what I'm liking about some of the other stuff that's happening, and we kind of saw a little bit with the Order of Maw tribes, is that you're taking old models and you're making them new into AOS. Mm. And you're giving models that, let's be real, aren't that great, Carriage and Overlords, and
what?
And allowing them to kind of work into some new armies. So with Cities, you know, you can run, like, you have the option of running some Stormcast in there, as well as like older stuff. You can run some Carriage and Overlord in there. You've got kind of like this nice army soup, as you have coined it for 2019.
I don't think I coined that. I think somebody said that, and I just picked it up.
Oh, you picked it up. Oh, well, see, I first heard it from you, so I just assumed that you were smart.
That's how these things go.
Yeah. But to take a bunch of old stuff and make it new again is a really great idea, because I know, like, anytime that, like, a new game system kind of happens, you see, like, a lot of, like, the old players and the fantasy players got real, like, I can't bring such and such anymore.
X
model anymore.
Doom Kings. Sorry, I had to clear my throat there, away from the microphone.
But now with Cities of Sigmar, a lot of that stuff you can again. So we get to see weirder models on the table, and yeah, I mean, not everything's great, but like, for instance, our friend that brought just a bunch of tanks, just a bunch of steam tanks.
That will be our list of the week at one point. I'm going to get Chris to write that up, because it was just steam tanks.
It was just steam tanks.
And no, it was a Hurricaneum. It was the two magic wagons for nerds. I don't remember the names of these things. The Hurricaneum and the other one, the Luminarch, I think. And then just steam tanks.
And just steam tanks. And it was great, because it's something that you're never going to see on the table. Like, that's just stuff you don't see.
I think that's what's been great about a lot of the redos of the Battletomes, is they've put in so many options for armies that used to not have a lot of options.
Right.
Like, for example, the Ogre Maw tribes, like, you have mount traits now. I can put a trait on my mounts.
Just the fact that you can bring Ogres with Beast Claw.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Solves so many problems with list building, because now you've got a lot of options.
And we started to see it with the Orc War Clans book, too, is that you've got, you know, it's Iron Jaws, and you can run some Bone Splitters, and if you want to run, like, just a big old mix of that stuff and run it as a big WoW, that's awesome, too. And so, the more, like, variety that we get to see on the table, and it's not just these six things, and that's the only way to play the game.
Yes.
Is that I want to get away from that. I want to see more weird stuff. I want to see, especially with, and I think the real beauty with Cities is that you're going to get, somebody somewhere is going to tap in and figure out some really, really cool tricks that it's going to exist in this book, and they haven't figured it out yet because it's freaking huge.
Yeah, there's so many things that interact with so many other things.
So many
and then
other
you
things.
Add in Stormcast, KO, and Sylvaneth, which can all be various allies with various cities.
Right.
And then all the realm artifacts and all of those things.
And
I'm sure there's a listener right now with his Excel spreadsheet open. He's saying he's about to end our entire world right now.
Please tell us what that is.
Yeah.
Because I have all these old models and I would like to win games. And Anvil Guard, believe it or not, is not a powerhouse.
Yeah, no, not so much.
Not
that
a powerhouse.
Charybdis looks dope, though.
Yeah, all Charybdis armies are great. They won't win. But they're a lot of fun to play.
But they're fun to play. And yeah, I mean, if I can get more fun and more variety in the game, then I'm all for it.
I love how Cities, I mean, I actually built and painted my Battle Mage on Griffin, because
how long have you had that model for?
2 years.
Yeah,
because it was just in a box, because it's cool and it works, and it was a lot of fun to do, and
it has rules
and digging up a lot of that old stuff. I mean, they've been, since Beast of Chaos came out, they kind of started doing that, and I think these are great books, because if you have an old army, they let you do it. If you have a new, you know, you got to start collecting, they're fantastic. If you got a mix, and especially if you're savvy with eBay and those kind of things, which, since we're not sponsored by Games Workshop, eBay is a really great place to find things.
Especially to find old stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of this old stuff got sold by players
a couple
of years ago.
It's a great way to buy Korgraths.
It's the only way to buy Korgraths. David is stuck on Korgraths, everybody. you can't see his tears, but he's...
I'm crying.
But they, you can get a lot of the older models, especially because a lot of people abandon them. And
yeah.
I mean, I've got boxes of elves over there that I don't even know what to do because I picked them up for super cheap when they got essentially squatted from Age of Sigmar. I will say the city's book is kind of weird with how many things it cut out.
Sure.
Like certain elves made it, certain elves didn't. It kind of seems strange that they didn't either put all of it or parts of it. But
maybe it's foreshadowing for future armies.
Oh, I think we know something is coming out of Heish. Heish, and we know it's probably Light Elf related, maybe. That's sort of where the rumor is. So
yeah.
Killing off a lot of the High Elf stuff is good. I never really thought the High Elves were that cool. They got funny cone head helmets, and I don't see how that works in a fight, because someone could just push your head over and you'd fall over. But giant helmets are kind of a Warhammer thing.
Right. Well, don't worry, there's magic and all kinds of weird stuff that could easily explain it.
That's true, they have magic
hands. They have enchanted pointy hats that can never fall over. They're perfectly balanced.
I'm sure there's a book somewhere that actually references some sort of magic that elves would use in the old world to hold their hats on.
Because they just have pointy skulls.
That's what I've always kind of wondered, is if they just are like giant cone heads.
Yeah, they're just cone heads.
I thought there's a couple of them without
the head. Let's all think about
on.
That movie for a few minutes.
Let's all think about cone heads. This is the Cone Head Podcast. We're going to be talking about all cone heads all the time. All right, so that was pretty good.
This podcast is rebranded about 5 times.
We're going to keep going until we find our target audience. But I agree. I think the suit books are great. That was almost, as we talked, that was almost my number one.
Yeah.
Just the suit books in general have done a fantastic job of that. And even as someone who didn't have a lot of the old figures, I went and I bought old halberdiers. I always hated halberdiers. I always thought that just the normal German guys in foofy pants made no sense in Age of Sigmar. But now they kind of do.
Yeah.
And they kind of fit a nice little spot, and it's such a narrative way to build an army.
Yeah.
You know, it won't necessarily win.
But you can have fun with it.
But you can have a lot of fun. I mean, I ran Anvil Guard all Scourge Runners, which has been my dream for a couple of years to be able to do that.
And you finally got to.
He's been sitting on that list for a very long
time. I've been sitting on that list for a really long time. And it performed exactly as well as I thought it was going to.
But did you have fun?
I had a great time.
And
man,
that's the important thing.
So many Charybdis and elves.
What we're all here for.
Just, it was a lot of fun. It's a 60-point hero, too, in that list. It's the cheapest orc hero. And as we saw that one time, he went berserk on a couple of orcs. So
it was great.
He can win.
Yeah. So, since cities wasn't your top, Zach, what was?
So, talking about new books. And this was a hard one. I was stuck in the end. You could say this was such a hard choice for me. It was nearly petrified because I think I'm going to land with the Ossiarchs, the Bone Daddies themselves, the Bone Cast Immortals.
Zach liking a Death Army?
I really feel like you foreshadowed that earlier in this podcast.
And it's like I love Death Armies or something. It's like I've got a million skeletons up there on that shelf because
your first
I like
army,
skeletons.
Was your first army Death?
If you take out the dwarves from when I was 14 or so, yes. I love Skellymans. The start collecting box with the Mortark, that was, I think, the first box I got for this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had Arcan. And now, speaking of why I love Ossiarch so much, I've had Arcan since the game started, and I can't tell you how many times he got shot or murdered off the table, because he was not survivable in a Death Army, and even in a Legions of Nagash army, he didn't really have a lot of ways to live very long, especially against shooting. So he kind of just sat on the shelf for me for a while, and then Ossiarch shows up. And now Arcan can get an automatic +1 to his save. He can have guys that on a 2-up take wounds for him. He can have 6 of those guys. He can essentially show up with 24 extra hit points and then just walk into a fight. And he has all these great spells now. And it's like, I can finally use him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Ossiarch stuff was divisive on the head sculpts in particular. A lot of people were like, why are these Skelly men smiling all the time? Why do they look so happy? And I get it. I get why some
honestly,
people
I thought
at
it was kind of creepy.
And that's kind of what I think. And a skull smiles
like these are
if
some,
you don't have skin. Like,
I mean,
that's
these are
it looks.
Horrible. You know, if I saw one of these things in real life and it was smiling at me, I'd probably poop my pants.
They're horrifying. And they, to me, I think the thing that people didn't like is they were doing them with a very traditional paint scheme, and that paint scheme didn't work. I've done mine as a black paint scheme to do Petrifix, and I think that looks awesome.
Yeah, I think what you have is really cool. I mean,
I'm looking at
someone
one
the table
right now.
Right now. Yeah.
Looks,
yeah, we're looking at them right on the table.
One of them's headless and the other and its head is impaled on a spear.
Yeah, one of them, for some reason, one of my Immortus Guard has pulled the head off of one of my Cavalos riders. It's a very strange concept. But I love the book. I love the lore of it. The concept of these guys being multiple parts of multiple souls. They're evil Stormcast, kind of. And if you get into the lore of it, I'm not going to go into that all the way, because I might do an episode where I just talk about the lore of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're so cool and they're so unique because, for one, they're not cannibals, which means they don't match roughly half of the other armies.
That's true.
In the Age of Sigmar. Everybody's eating everybody in the Age of Sigmar.
Cannibals?
Ogors?
Ogors, we're not cannibals.
Flesh-eater, corn cannibal ogors. It's a lot of people in the Age of Sigmar eat or drink other people in some way. So it's kind of cool to see that these guys don't really care about that. They just want your bone stuff. The terrain piece is ridiculous, and I love it. Even though I have never managed to make it do much of anything, the fact that you can do 1 point of damage to something anywhere on the table, pretty much, because it's got a 36-inch range and it's huge, is real sneaky when someone has a wizard sitting on one wound hiding behind something, or something's one wound away from a profile. And that's the thing I love, is the lore worked great, and then when you get to the rules, it fits the lore so well. These are the perfect warriors, and they're super practiced in every style of fighting. Every one of them is the amalgamation of hundreds of souls of warriors, and it makes sense that they would have access to a lot of different cool attacks, a lot of ways to reroll hits, reroll wounds. Conceptually, they're better at fighting, so of course they're going to reroll a lot more. They're more likely to actually win their fights. And the way they play is very tactical, because if you know what your opponent has and what their strengths are, you can absolutely bring the silver bullet and shut them down. There's something in this book that will work as a toolkit to shut down almost every armor, including ones like Slaanesh, because you can just stick a bunch. Now, the answer usually is Mortek Guard. It's just a lot of Mortek Guard.
I mean, Mortek Guard are really, really good.
They're really good. And as soon as I get 40 painted, you guys are not going to want to play with me anymore, because it's just going to be Nagash and Mortek Guard. And
I played with
David's
you.
David's going to have PTSD from Nagash again. All over, he's back, baby.
I played with you through the Nagash days. I'm not going anywhere.
Well, wait for the Nagash with a +1 inherent save that you can't modify.
I got handed dusted plenty of times. I'll be fine.
How'd you like that Nagash with a 2+?
That's, I don't like it, but I'll sit there for it.
So to me, the Ossiarch stuff was the combination of the lore was fantastic, the rules are fantastic, I love the models, like it just knocked it out of the park to me.
And I think the nice thing too is I didn't find it overpowering.
Yeah,
I think that's the key.
And a lot of people, I've been reading a lot, like on TGA and a lot of the other sites, and people are saying, well, if you play it as Petrifix, you can build a list that is basically unfun to play against. You can build a list that's...
Well, you can do that with any army, honestly.
Yeah, most armies have a way to build a list that's, maybe if it's not overpowered, it's just really frustrating to play against. And yes, you can do that. But you can also play a list where your guys explode all the time. Or you can play one that's all about the horse guys. There's so many options to do it. You don't have to pick Petrifix and run the meta killer list
right. To
have fun with this. And I ran Petrifix in the tournament. I ran it all the way to the bottom. Went 1-4. Ended up against the steam tank list.
Yeah, you did.
We met in the bottom there and had a great time in the last table. And I don't. In no way did it feel... I mean, it didn't feel overpowered because I was losing. But even losing, I still felt like if I had a little more practice, I had never played them before the tournament. I might have done a little better.
Well, that book had come out like...
It also came out a week before the tournament.
Like 4 days before the tournament started. So
in a week, I managed to prepare 2K of Ossiarch, which I cheated because I already had some Morghasts and Arcan and stuff painted, so I could throw them in there.
What you're saying is it wasn't optimal?
Yeah, no, it wasn't optimal. The catapult wasn't even out yet.
It's true.
So I couldn't run the thing that everyone was telling me was too unbalanced because I didn't have it. So the Ossiarch thing to me, that's my number one for the year. I will say, close runner-up, though, Slaves to Darkness. And I'm just going to say, because it is the most heavy metal book in existence.
It's
and
really cool.
There's some solid stuff in there. We're going to do a review of that in a couple episodes, and we're going to get a lot more into it.
If OST was the army, it would be...
It absolutely is. It is a guitar riff played through like a burning skull on top of a flaming altar of sweet heavy metal. Like, it's so cool, and it's so thematic to the Slaves to Darkness. My only complaint with it is it's a very short book, and I think we'll get to that in the review. But that's the only reason Ossiarch beat it, is because I wanted more from the Slaves to Darkness book.
Absolutely.
Especially after that book we haven't had a book for that army ever in Age of Sigmar.
Right.
Well, ever chosen. It was a book really for four guys.
I don't really think that counts, yeah.
Yeah, that really count, yeah. Although they use the same cover art, which is another reason. So, Ossiarch, that's my thing. Them's my bones.
Big double thumbs up on that
double
one.
Double thumbs up. Triple thumbs up to Thick Skeletons, man.
David, like that. What you got?
Alright, so mine is not an Age of Sigmar specific thing. It's more of a...
Well, this is an Age of Sigmar podcast, so you...
Well, you're going to have to leave me alone. I'm trying not to use profanity, but...
We're way past 30 seconds, man.
You're good.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
I'm trying to keep our young children able to tune in without their moms getting mad.
Yes. All those young kids who are...
So mine is, back to the topic, is a Games Workshop product, and not specific to Age of Sigmar. It's the contrast paints.
But David, you hate painting.
I do hate painting, and I still kind of low-key hate painting.
But
the contrast paints...
You'll do it.
The contrast paints have made it a lot easier to feel good about what I get done.
They're incredible.
Because I can paint like one dude that takes me like 30 minutes, and that's my fill for the week. It's like, I'm not a painting fan. I'm not an artistic person. I'd rather put the models together and then throw gray plastic, but I got told I'm not allowed to do that anymore. So
we're kindred spirits in that way, David.
I'm slowly getting around...
Paint your stuff, guys.
I'm slowly getting around to actually having my first fully painted army, and I'm proud of it. And I'm not going to win any golden paintbrush anytime soon. I don't think that's actually an award.
I think it's Golden Demon, right?
I don't know.
And then there's Everchosen, which is like the top.
I don't know. I'm sure.
We're so far from this.
I'm sure our one fan's going to correct me at some point.
Yes.
But it's made it a lot better for me to paint. The fact that I can just dip a paintbrush in something, slap it on something, and that's all I got to do for it.
It does the job.
It does the job.
It does, yeah. I mean, it's a wash.
That's the word, the wash.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a like, they're basically, if you haven't at home, if you haven't used a contrast paint, put down the TV, turn off the phone, whatever you're listening to right now, throw it out the window, go buy a contrast paint. Specifically buy what is it? It's the one that's the wood. There's two browns. I think it's just called Wildwood, actually.
I think it is Wildwood.
I got Gorgon prefers my brown.
Wildwood is, I put it on some boards on something, and it looks incredible.
It just looks good. It looks like it's supposed to. Well, I mean, it's also like the only way that you got all those Oscar Bone Reapers painted.
That is the only way I got those Oscar. And the only way when I decided 2 weeks before ATC to run 80 skeletons, that I got 80 skeletons done in
And time. The blue, the Aether blue or something like that, that I used for the ice horns, looks amazing.
Yeah.
It looks like ice, and I didn't have to be good at painting to do it.
I remember when they were coming out, there was some complaints, and this is the far depths of complaining, to say that it was going to make too many armies look too similar, and it was going to lead to a lot of like halfway done armies on the table. But in the same way, if you're only fighting gray plastic all the time, at least having some color on the table and some interesting things, that looks good.
And it opens up the hobby to a lot more people, in my opinion.
Yeah,
for more people like me that just painting it feels like a chore. It's my least favorite part of the hobby. It will always be my least favorite part of the hobby. I will never get a model that will ever win any sort of award. And it's opened a hobby up a lot more for me. And I feel like it's done that for a lot of people. Yeah. And some people have taken contrast paints and done really cool stuff with them.
Oh, yeah. You can use them with actual painting techniques and other paints and make really incredible stuff. One of our sponsors, Llama Juice Painting, he does that, actually.
Yeah.
He does a really fantastic job with it. Or you can do like I do and just slap a bunch of contrast on there, do a dry brush and call it a day, and it looks fine.
And it's so easy to use. You just open up the pot. You ain't got to mix some water in there. You ain't got to thin it out. You don't have to do anything.
No.
Just dip your paintbrush in there, slap it on, and bam.
Good to go.
You know, maybe sop up some, you know, puddles here and there if you need to, depending on the model. But
yeah, I've noticed it doesn't work great over long, smooth areas.
Which is weird because they're, you know, when they were showing it off originally, they used Space Marines, which don't have a lot of...
Yeah, they got a lot
they
of flat
have a lot,
spots.
Yeah, they got a lot of flat spots. Not a ton of detail. Don't hate me because I've never looked at one in depth. But yeah, for fur, it's amazing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
When I was painting my Stonehorn and I was running against fur, the fur looks great.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything to it.
I mean, I'm really excited to get into them because I mean, my Iron Jaws list is not, it's just done with normal paints because I had already been working on that by the time the contrast paints came out. But the Ogre Maw Tribes list that I'm working on is going to be done with all contrast paints. Like, that's what I'm working on. And it's speeding up the process a lot for me to actually get them table ready because I don't have to worry about, like, picking out all the little bits and details and stuff like that because, like you, David, I hate paint.
I hate it. I'm sorry for everybody here who loves painting. I don't enjoy it. If you enjoy it, more power to you. I'm glad you have something you enjoy. I like building models.
The arts and crafts portion of this, not so great for me. I didn't like drawing growing up. I don't like painting. If I get to put the model together, great. But as far as the rest of that goes...
My favorite part of the hobby is building the models. I love building models. My Gundam model kit shelf is very full. I need to get a new one. But painting, it doesn't do it for me.
I like that we have two people that hate painting on a podcast, and we're sponsored by a painting guy. Yeah.
Hey, so, but you know what?
Well, that's okay. That's why, because he'll paint your models for you. I'll paint your models for you.
He does videos and streams, and you can go check him out.
Yeah, and
yeah,
you
certainly should.
Because I think we're about wrapping it up here. Yes. Mm-hmm. So you know where you can find Justin, who's the guy who does Llama Juice painting. You can find him on...
AtlantaWarhammer.com.
What's that site again?
AtlantaWarhammer.com,
which is what the this podcast is going to be hosted on. Once again, I think we're wrapping it up. I think we've decided some pretty cool things. So overall, we're saying the best of and the worst of. It was a pretty good year.
Yeah, it was a very good year for AOS.
Compared to the first year we started playing, Zach, I think this it's like night and day what they're doing with Age of Sigmar.
It's so much more of a cohesive game, and the story is moving along, which is really nice.
The story is really cool.
For people like me that want to know why these fights are happening and what's going on with Nagash, to actually see the story moving a little bit by book, and then in the big expansions.
The support for the game. The support for the game has really exploded. I remember when we first started playing at Gigabytes, it was just four of us.
Yeah.
Josh wasn't even there yet.
No.
And now there's like 40 people.
Yeah, we've got a really good group at our
in the league, I think. So
our local game shop is really kind of like we've grown a really great community there.
I think if our local game shop is any sample of how the rest of the game is going around the country and the world, really, because this is a worldwide game, I think it's going really well. And the rate that they're releasing stuff at this point in time definitely shows how much support this game's going to be getting in the future.
How overworked have these guys got to be? Because how many books did they put
out
this year?
Someone's making a lot of money.
There was a battle tome. It felt like every other month there was a new battle tome. Yeah. And then there's, you know, armies and new models.
And it's still going strong. It doesn't
the whole Forbidden Power set that
it
I think
doesn't
only
feel
I
like
I
it's slowing
bought.
Down, which is great.
Yeah.
Eventually, I'm sure it will slow down, but
and a whole new game system that is also kind of falling into.
We're talking about the Warcries.
I am talking
about the Warcries.
Can't wait to get my hands on the Warcries.
Warcry is a whole separate thing.
It's a whole separate thing, but it also feeds into AOS, and we got that this year, and then there's more, and obviously we'll be talking about that in a future podcast.
Yes,
in that outlooks for 2020.
And that sounds like a great episode that we should do maybe for the next podcast.
Ooh, I like it.
What we want to see, what we actually think. And what we want to see and what we actually think we'll get.
You mean we're not going to do the hottest character podcast like I talked about?
It's us here,
dude,
man.
we can't be rating all them boys 1 to 10.
I was going for a waifu tier list.
Waifu tier list? who's your top waifu? Let's go. Let's wrap it up with the top waifu list.
My top waifu is the Ogre Tyrant.
Ogre Tyrant.
He's totally a waifu.
He's probably eaten quite a few waifus.
I would totally put him on a... body pillow.
That'd be a huge body pillow, but probably really snuggly. Yeah.
I'm a big dude, so I need a big body pillow.
I don't think an Ossiarch body pillow would be as comfortable.
I wish I knew what we were talking about.
Jump into the weeb zone with us, Josh.
I don't
join the weeb zone.
I'm so uncomfortable.
Josh doesn't visit Reddit, apparently.
Josh has managed to escape the toxicity of the internet that you and I grew up in.
Oh, yes.
We were birthed from it.
I'm circling.
Like a Seraphim birthing pod, which may or may not exist. Who knows? Let's find out next time on Will Seraphim Ever Get a Book or the next episode.
Yeah.
What do we want to see? So,
thanks for joining us on episode one, guys.
Thanks for joining
us. This was fun.
Check us out on AtlantaWarhammer.com.
My palms are only slightly sweaty.
I'm just all kinds of sweaty over here.
Sweaty.
Sweaty? Sweaty palms?
Hit him with those things one more time, Zach.
All right. So, AtlantaWarhammer.com is the website. You can also find us on the Twitters at ATL Warhammer because the name was too long. Or you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Atlanta Warhammer. We're the one that says Atlanta Warhammer on the cover.
Oh, good, because I don't know how to use Twitter, so I'm going to use Facebook.
Use Facebook. Catch us anywhere. Catch us everywhere. Follow us on all your devices. Check us out. The website's got blogs and things going up every day now.
Oh, and subscribe to the podcast.
And hit whatever, smash whatever button is a subscribe button on your particular device.
Yeah, make sure that you get these in your doobly-doos.
Slap a bell, pump a thumbs up, whatever you're listening on. Make sure you can get more of these, because why wouldn't you? We're fantastic, and we're glad to bring this entertainment to your home. I think we're great. And really, this might just be all of us in an echo chamber, but I'm having a good time.
Hey, man. That's what I do anyways.
That's what it's like. So, for Atlanta Warhammer, I'm Zach.
I'm Josh.
I'm David.
We'll come up with a catchphrase later. Bye, guys!